Hello, this is Denise Yon, and welcome to the Brand is Business Bites podcast. The Brand is Business Bites podcast gives you a taste of insights and information about brands, businesses, and the people who work on them. It's available on iTunes. For more stuff for your brain to chew on, please visit my website at deniseleeyon.com. Today, I have the pleasure of sharing a conversation with Whitney Johnson, who is a self-described investor of stocks, people, concepts, and dreams. She is the author of Dare, Dream, Do, an inspiring text about the importance of having and pursuing dreams. Whitney has held a range of investment banking and research roles at Salomon Smith Barney and Merrill Lynch, and most recently co-founded Rose Park Advisors, an investment firm alongside Clay Christensen. Whitney is also a regular contributor to the Harvard Business Review blog, and most recently wrote a piece that I've asked her to talk about today. So welcome, Whitney.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
You recently posted a piece on the HBR blog entitled, Innovation Needs a Lingua Franca. What prompted you to write that, and what points were you trying to communicate?
The genesis of this piece was actually fairly interesting because my editor at the Harvard Business Review actually asked me to write a piece about my international experience. And it hadn't really occurred to me to write a piece about that, perhaps because it was so long ago, perhaps because it was as a missionary in Uruguay, it wasn't business related, et cetera. But once she asked me to write the piece, and because I like to have people throw something at me and say, can you make sense of X and Y, even though they seem completely unrelated, and pull those disparate pieces together and make meaning of them, I welcomed the challenge. And so once she asked me to do that, I started to say, okay, what did I really learn while I was living in Uruguay, and how can that be applied to business? And what I was trying to communicate in this piece is this idea of, as you're trying to innovate and sort of to bring it to the present, earlier this year, I was asked to speak at a Fortune 100 company about not disruptive innovation on its own, but how do you implement a disruptive idea, which is much harder because then they're saying, no more theory, let's get down to tactics and strategy. And the first thing that I realized as I went to speak to this group of people was that in order for them to implement a disruptive idea, they had to socialize the idea, and socializing the idea required that they translate it into a language that the people, the key stakeholders from whom they needed buy-in, had to be able to understand it. And I realized that by having gone to a foreign country and having had to learn to speak a foreign language and figure out how to communicate my ideas, that had given me an intrinsic understanding of what it meant to socialize an idea within a corporation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, it's so interesting that there's the innovation part of innovation, but then to your point, there's the socializing part of the innovation as well. And I think my observation would be that companies often don't spend enough time on the latter. You know, they might think a lot about what are they innovating, but not necessarily think about how do you actually engage the entire organization in that.
Right, and that's the hard part, right? Because, you know, thinking about innovating is fun and exciting, and it's a bright, shiny object, and then there's the work. You know, let's build a house, and then you have to build the house. And I think with disruptive innovation in particular, we do tend to really frame it as a battle, the heroic disruptive David against the oafish bureaucratic Goliath, or as a spy game involving stealth. And so even though it's a natural framing of the problem, at best, within an organization, you get this push-me-pull-you sort of Dr. Doolittle situation where nothing happens. But at worst, you really have people within the organization itself pitted against each other for their survival. And so it makes it very, very difficult, again, under the best of circumstances, to implement innovation. But most of the time, it's just difficult because someone feels like they're fighting for their lives as you're trying to implement those innovative, game-changing ideas.
Right, right. So it's definitely a cultural issue, and language is such a critical part of developing a culture and you know, developing a vital one. So I can definitely see what you're talking about. One of the things that you talked about in your piece was soft power, which sounds like it draws upon the power of like seduction and influence. And I want to know, why is that a more effective way to lead innovation than a more directive kind of top-down approach?
Such a great question. I think the way I would frame this or how I would think about this and trying to sort of talk through it is a more directive approach really relies on our requiring people to do something, making it requisite for them. And yet when I think about us as human beings, I think we were made to be agentic, meaning we were made to act rather than being acted upon. And when there's a more of a directive approach, we're being acted upon or required to do something. And when there is more of a soft power approach, we're making a decision to act. I'm struck by the word seduction because it does imply this sort of darker motive than gentle mm-hmm. persuasion. But I think that when I think about soft power, for me, the premise is that this idea that fundamentally, if people know you, you believe that they will want to belong and it will be something that will contribute to the greater good.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, though, that there's a difference between soft power and, let's say, consensus building, where you're kind of looking to your organization for the idea or kind of trying to get, you know, everyone to agree that this is the right thing before you go do it, as opposed to having a clear vision of what this innovation should be or the direction that you need to go and find people to it, right?
Right. I think that's right. I think if I were to put these in sort of step phases or sort of linear, I would say that the soft power comes first. And one of the things that I talk about in the piece that I learned in this very fundamental visceral sense is that Joseph Nye, who popularized this term, and he was really talking about soft power in the context of just diplomacy, he was saying, look, we have 500,000 students come to the U.S. every year, and by being instructed in universities, they go back to their home countries, and they become effectively ambassadors for the United States. And I was experiencing that in reverse, obviously. By going to Uruguay, being there for a year and a half, I was among the people, and I think anybody who goes into the Peace Corps, any type of experience like that, I came back very much an ambassador for, with tremendous goodwill toward Uruguay specifically and the Spanish-speaking culture generally. And so I think that that is sort of a groundwork premise of building soft power, building goodwill. But then when it comes to actually implementing an idea within an organization, I think it's much more tactical. Okay, I've got an idea. I need to make sure that I figure out who are the stakeholders, who are the people that are going to have some say in this idea, and who is going to feel threatened by this idea, even more importantly. And once I've identified those people, how do I figure out a way to talk about this idea in a language they can understand? If they're a finance person, I've got to learn how to talk about it in dollars or you know, renminbi or whatever it is. If they are a marketing person, I have to talk about it in a language that they can understand. So that's the first, you know, identify the stakeholders, number one. Number two, figure out what language they speak, figure out how to de-risk it, and you de-risk it by talking about it in their language. And then the third piece, which is going back to this idea of pronouns, is what pronouns are we using? Because ultimately pronouns are values clarification tasks. So are we using we as we're talking about this? Are we looking at this as we, is it David versus Goliath, or are we David and Goliath working mm-hmm. together to vanquish the competition? And I think that language piece of it in socializing is eminently important in terms of actually implementing the innovative ideas.
Right, right. That's so fascinating. And just hearing you talk about the pronoun thing, it, you know, it makes me think that often we are trained to use certain pronouns to be probably more politically correct, really, than anything. But what you're saying is that it really has, it can be a very powerful tool in terms of engaging people and being able to do something like disruptive innovation.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I think you're right. I think that there's sort of a false use of pronouns, and we need to be wary of that. But I think if we can be aware of the pronouns that we're using, they give us a lot of information about what we're really feeling and thinking about a situation. But then if we are truly trying to effect change, if we can use those pronouns judiciously, they will make a huge difference.
Right. Wow. Well, I'm curious, in addition to what you've already talked about and written, what other takeaways did you glean from your time as a missionary in Uruguay? It sounds like a fascinating experience.
Good question. I would say the first thing would be is that I found that when I spoke and learned a foreign language, I found more of my voice, meaning I was unfettered by the cultural limitations of English. So English is a wonderful language, and you know, my native language, and I love this language, but there are certain meanings and connotations and all sorts of cultural limitations to this language. And by learning a foreign language, and in particular a Romance language, I found that I became more animated when I spoke. I felt like my brow unfurrowed a little bit. I found that I felt more of myself. And so I think learning another language is like I almost found this new piece of me that I could plug into, you know, the old Whitney. And I think that I suspect that's true for anybody that learns a language. So that was really kind of a magical thing for me. And the second thing that I would say I learned is that during the early months when I got to Uruguay and I really couldn't speak the language, the only thing that I really had to offer people was, you know, you always travel in twos. And so my companion could speak the language, but I couldn't. And so the only thing I had to offer people was a smile and to look at them and to be interested in them, even if I couldn't say anything to them and I couldn't understand what they were speaking. And so I think, you know, that smile, it is such a valuable thing. That gesture of goodwill, whether we're trying to speak a language, to try to do service, or if we're in a business context of just that gesture of goodwill, which in this instance was a smile. And that was a really valuable lesson for me as well.
Hmm. So how important that nonverbal communication can be. I'm thinking that in a context where you can't communicate verbally, you really do understand the importance of that. Well, Whitney, thank you so much for sharing such important insights with us today, not only about innovation, but just about language and about communication. Really appreciate it. For my listeners, I want you to know that you can learn more about Whitney on her site, whitneyjohnson.com, and I encourage you to follow her on Twitter at JohnsonWhitney. So her handle is at JohnsonWhitney. Whitney, thank you again. I look forward to speaking with you again soon.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening to the Brand as Business Bites podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so your brain will always be filled with good stuff to chew on. For more information or to contact me directly, please visit my website at deniseleeyan.com. Take care and thanks again.